Hello, welcome to Bare Naked Politics. This is the podcast for people who want to keep up with the headlines, but who are tired or who have very little time or who aren't politics experts and who, you know, maybe feel like sometimes the mainstream news requires that of them to keep up and that's not entirely doable. If you are that, then this is for you. I'm Julia Bell and I like to strip it all back and make it make sense. And today I want to give you the full rundown of where we are with these fines that have been handed out to a certain workforce who happen to work in the very place that make the rules that most of the public broke their backs to keep while they went ahead and seemingly ignored them at a really disturbing number of occasions. So off the back of that, I imagine you have some questions. And understandably, this story has sort of taken a back seat, but I want to keep you up with everything where possible. So I imagine those questions include things like what actually came of that police investigation? Who are the people that got fines? What happens to them? And I suppose most importantly of all, really, is this scandal going to affect Boris Johnson within his position? Could it at any time result in him not being prime minister anymore? Because not so long ago, sort of Christmas or January time, I suppose, there was this mass outrage and there looked to be a chance of a no confidence vote. Is that still a possibility? So let me answer those questions for you. And also later in the podcast, I will play you back a quick conversation that I had with an HR director and consultant by the name of Mandy, who was really lovely. And she talked to me about whether getting a COVID break fine could ever be justified as a fireable offence in a workplace. So I took quite a lot away from that chat and I'll play that in a bit. Lots to get into. But before we do, please take this 2 seconds just to subscribe, please, or to click follow to this podcast, depending on what platform you're using. And that means you'll never miss an episode. You'll always know when I've uploaded a new one. And why not give it a 5-star rating while you're there? So thank you in advance for that. And without further ado, let's talk about this Partygate stuff and whether it really matters anymore or if it's truly dead. Okay, let me start off just by giving you a quick refresher as to where we are and how we got here, because I know a lot has happened between sort of Christmas 2021 and now. So if you can kind of hark your mind, is that how you say it? Hark your mind back to early December 2021, the first news broke that there had been gatherings and parties in government departments, including in Number 10, during the height of lockdown restrictions. And bear in mind as well, just so you can remember the kind of the mood of the nation, this big breaking story was just off the back of a long-running scandal around MPs having second jobs. Do you remember that? And it all circled around this MP by the name of Owen Paterson. And in some cases, it seemed, you know, are they using their positions in Parliament to lobby for the interests of those second jobs and therefore lobbying for their own interests or their own bank accounts, however you want to see it. So it already was not a great time in terms of PR for the Conservative Party, since a fair few of their MPs were under the microscope in that debate. And of course, it led to Owen Paterson's resignation. So that was the mood of the nation. And in that first week, when these parties came to light, there were 3 events, rule-breaking events, that were alleged. And the initial reaction from Boris Johnson, I'll never forget it, was to say, or rather to repeat, that all guidance was followed. In fact, it quite frankly became his catchphrase. This will jog your memory.
What I could tell the Right Honourable Gentleman is that all guidance was followed completely during Number 10.
So there you go. We all remember that exchange in Parliament. And then, of course, I would be remiss not to mention the now legendary, for all the wrong reasons, video from that press briefing room when Number 10 staffer Allegra Stratton had this weird joke with her colleagues about a quote-unquote business meeting with wine and cheese, which again, they were referring to a time where parties or even gatherings with wine and cheese were not allowed. And that was a huge scandal and it led to her very tearful resignation. But still, Boris Johnson stuck to his guns that, as far as he was aware, no rules were broken.
I know that today Allegra Stratton has resigned, and I wanted to pay tribute to her. All the evidence I can see is that people in this building have stayed within the rules.
So there you go. That was him kind of in response and following on from the Allegra Stratton video and resignation. And you know what? It's not that fun hearing that clip back now with the knowledge that we have. I have to admit, it just all feels very contradictory what was said then and what we know to be the case now. Now, within a week of that, the Sue Gray investigation was announced. By the way, drink every time I say Sue Gray in this episode, where she's back on the scene, everyone. We're talking about her again. But yes, a senior civil servant by the name of Sue Gray launched this investigation, and it was an internal investigation. And it started with those three events that had been outed, so to speak, but quickly grew until she was investigating no less than 16 different events or parties. And, you know, you'll remember that the public anger and political pressure was mounting, which did lead to Boris Johnson doing something quite unusual for him, which was to make an apology at the dispatch box, which isn't a regular thing. His political style is very much to sort of plough on and disregard the disapproval of others. But in this instance, he bent his own trend, it seems.
Mr. Speaker, I want to apologise. I know that millions of people across this country have made extraordinary sacrifices over the last 18 months. I know the anguish that they have been through, unable to mourn their relatives, unable to live their lives as they want, or to do the things they love. And I know the rage they feel with me and with the government I lead when they think that in Downing Street itself, the rules are not being properly followed by the people who make the rules. And though I cannot anticipate the conclusions of the current inquiry, I have learned enough to know that there were things we simply did not get right.
And thus became the new catchphrase, which was, wait for Sue Gray, we must wait for Sue Gray. Whenever Boris Johnson was grilled about this by the opposition, by the media, by the public, he always had this, it was weirdly like a helpful get-out clause. You know, there's no point me answering that because we don't know the results of Sue Gray's investigation. Let's wait for Sue Gray's investigation. It was weird because what seemed like it should be a stain on his leadership became this sort of gift for a while. The ultimate gift of procrastination. And then you might remember when we were just on the cusp of getting the findings from this fucking report over a month after it had been commissioned, Cressida Dick, the now former head of the London Metropolitan Police, announced that actually now there's going to be a police investigation. Even though previously the police had said, oh no, we're not going to bother with doing an official thing because there's not enough evidence. Not enough evidence, which is just wrong and weird now since we know that they had been handed, quote, well over 500 pieces of paper and more than 300 photographs. I don't know what not enough evidence constitutes, but for this layman over here, that seems like quite a lot. But even so, the police getting involved all of a sudden meant that the findings, if you'll remember, from the Sue Gray report needed to be scaled back so as not to prejudice the ongoing police case. And so if you're a loyal listener to the podcast, then you'll have heard the episode where I ran through the limited findings that Sue Gray was able to publish at the time. It's actually quite a helpful episode if you missed it, because I just ran through it in linear order and kind of talked through the whole thing. And even though they were limited, I mean, it was just basically one page of findings and then some indexy stuff and some context, but one page of actual findings in big font. Even though it was limited, it was still unbelievably damning. She used phrases like failures of leadership and judgment. Difficult to justify was another key one. And then she said some of the events should not have been allowed to take place. So even with the restrictions that were on her, it was quite clear, you know, her overall sentiment towards these events. Okay, so that's the context. Now you're up to date. What's the latest, I hear you ask, when it comes to this police investigation? And what's the damage? Well, the police have been looking into 12 of the 16 events listed in the Sue Gray report. And we know, because it's backed up by the BBC, amongst others, that the PM was at least three of those 12. So the one on May 20th, 2020, in the Downing Street Garden, the one on the 19th of June 2020 in the Cabinet Room for his birthday, and the one on the 13th of November 2020 for the departure of this special advisor. So we know that, but we also assume or know that Boris Johnson has not been handed one of these fines because he has promised time and time again that he would tell us if he had. So the assumption is that amongst these 20, Boris Johnson has not been a recipient. Now, these fines are actually kind of called quote-unquote fixed penalty notices, which apparently hold similar weight or lack thereof to like a speeding ticket or a parking fine. So yes, there's an official record on the system, but it's not like you get a criminal record. It's like, you know, if one of your friends gets a parking ticket, you don't sit them down and have an intervention and say like, look, we need to consider your life choices. Like, it's, you know, it's not good, but it's not life-alteringly awful in most cases. And so still, the question here is, who got them? Who are the people that got these fixed penalty notices that are equivalent to a parking fine in the eyes of the law? And I suppose that, you know, lots of you might find what I'm about to say annoying, but basically the police have said that they won't be disclosing that. And the reason they've given it is that it's, you know, this fairly minor, quote unquote, offence, that they wouldn't usually publish the names for something like that. So they kind of need to treat the people who work in Downing Street equally to anyone else that would have been the recipient of something like this. Oh, actually, I say that the police aren't disclosing it, although there is at least one person who we know full well received a fine, because it was the front page splash of the Daily Telegraph last week. I was covering it on Five Live. And this story, I have to admit, I was drinking wine and I nearly spat it out on the floor because it was so, like, it's something, it just doesn't feel real, some of these stories. It was like something from The Thick of It, if you've ever watched that, or Veep. It was like something from Veep, in that it was so painfully, audaciously ironic. Essentially, at least one person that we do know, her name is Helen McNamara. You might have heard her name before because Dominic Cummings mentioned her a lot when he got grilled by that inquiry in spring last year. But she was a senior civil servant in charge of, again, this is what made me spout my wine, in charge of ethics. Right, so that was like literally her job title when, you know, she attended the event that gained her a fine. In fact, I still have the text from that front page article. It's published on the 3rd of April, front page of the Telegraph, and it read, the senior civil servant who was in charge of Whitehall ethics has been fined by police for attending a quote-unquote raucous lockdown karaoke party at which there was a drunken brawl, the Telegraph can reveal. Helen McNamara, the former deputy cabinet secretary whose karaoke machine was used at the event on June 18th, 2020, is the first person to be identified as having received a fixed penalty notice from Scotland Yard. She received a £50 fine on Friday after police concluded that she'd broken COVID laws by attending a leaving party for Hannah Young, a Downing Street aide who was moving to New York. The June karaoke party, this is the bit that's just like, what the fuck? The June karaoke party held in the Cabinet Secretary's office at 70 Whitehall took place at a time when all indoor gatherings were banned and when people were being advised not to sing in public. So let me just sum this up for you in case it isn't clear. Parties were banned, right, at the time this took place, which was June 18th, 2020. Singing was banned, right? We're being advised not to sing. These people, again, who make the rules, had a party to which a senior civil servant in charge of ethics thought, do you know what I'll do? I'll bring my karaoke machine. Like, a decision was made there. Ah, oh, yes, I will attend this illegal event. And just to add to the illegality of it, why don't I take this device that is centred around an activity that we have banned the public from partaking in? And not least, karaoke machines, if you've ever seen one, which I'm sure most of you have, you know, they've got this janky little microphone. And at a time of COVID, to be like, let's all sing into this janky microphone and pass it around and share it and share each other's juices. Like, it's so... And this person was in charge of ethics. Anyway, so that was something. It was wine-spittingly something. But she can't be fired for that role because she doesn't do it anymore. She left in 2020. So that's maybe why you haven't heard about, you know, a resignation in that context. But other than that, and the ones that I suppose come out in that sense, the police aren't disclosing the recipients of these fines. It's not like they're kind of broadcasting a list of names. And of course, it means that we don't know if these people are junior staff or senior civil servants or elected officials. And it, you know, whether you think that the police have an ethical responsibility to tell us is one thing. I know some people believe that, but it's a bit of an uncomfortable one, because then you're basically saying that anyone who works for Downing Street doesn't have the same rights as we do. And they're not, you know, not all of them are elected. So, like, technically, is it fair that we say, well, your privacy doesn't matter, even though they're not elected? It's up to you. It depends how you feel about that. I actually don't know if that's 100% fair, expecting the police to publish a list of names, even though, and I'm with you on this, it is not okay that these people had a karaoke party. It's not okay. I know I'm laughing, and I'm laughing not at the circumstances, because, you know, people were literally sacrificing everything they knew to try to uphold these rules that were set by these people. That's not a laughing matter. But what I do think is just outrageous is the decisions that were made by some of these people. At no point did a little voice in their head go, this is not right. This is not right. How did you not have a little voice in your head saying this is not right? That's the question. That's the main question that I want to ask. Do you know, I say that as someone who is 30 and who the voice in my head of like reason is louder now than maybe it was when I was like 21, 22. And, you know, perhaps, we don't know, but perhaps some of the recipients of these fines are more junior staff, because I have noticed that the sort of commentary around this isn't as severe as maybe you'd have expected. And I think that's perhaps because some of the commentators, some of the journalists are speculating like, oh, what if these people are really young? And what if there's this kind of internal culture of pressure? We just don't know what's going on the inside. Maybe there's people in their early 20s who were, you know, working within Downing Street at the time when lockdown was at its height. And if they got an email from their boss saying, like, you have to come to this party, or not you have to, but like, come to this party, maybe they'll have thought, well, I kind of have to go. But, you know, we just don't know. So I've noticed that there's sort of lighter commentary on this, perhaps for fear that some of these people were so junior, they didn't necessarily feel they had a choice. It's something to note. What we have been assured by number 10 is that if either Boris Johnson or Simon Case, who's the country's most sort of senior civil servant, if either of them get a fine, we will hear about it. They will tell us. That's what we've been assured. As for the others, though, it could technically remain a mystery. We may never know. Okay, another thing that you might be wondering, because I have, is this idea about, you know, what happens to these people? Obviously, this is a private matter for them, technically. If they, even though the events happened in the workplace, it will be a fine that's issued to them on a private basis, so to speak, in the same way that a parking ticket is. But are there any consequences for their job? You know, because we know that if it really is just comparable to a parking ticket, then technically nothing can come of it. But part of me, I guess, just couldn't accept the idea that breaking lockdown rules, which were the very rules your workplace set, was the same as, you know, parking in a permit holder's spot on a Tuesday afternoon. Part of me just thought, surely not, surely some heads are going to roll. So let's get to the bottom of that. I spoke to Mandy Harmella, an HR director and a consultant, and I basically started by asking her if these fines, within the context of HR, could ever be seen as a fireable offence. This is what she said.
For a normal person, no. So if you're an employee in an organisation and you've been fined for one of these, you know, given one of these penalties, then no, you would normally pay the fine. You wouldn't need to disclose it to your employer. With Downing Street, then it's a tough one, because essentially, you know, it's a fine like everybody else. If they pay it, then that's the end of it, really. They wouldn't need to disclose it to their employer, because it's like a speeding fine or any kind of other fine you might get.
Is it seriously seen the same way in terms of, like, my boss finding out that I'd got a speeding fine? I cannot imagine him you know, being extremely upset with me or wanting to call me in for some sort of HR briefing. However, if he found out, you know, I'd seriously, insultingly broke lockdown rules, I wonder if he'd kind of want to know about that. But you're saying from an HR perspective, it's kind of none of an employer's business.
Well, outside of the working hours, outside of the premises, what somebody does in their own time is really down to them. There is obviously a moral and ethical aspect to this of the people within Downing Street. But for a person, I mean, obviously with all fines, if you were a taxi driver and you get a speeding fine, then your employer might need to know about that. I think it depends on the context, it depends on the individual, and it's difficult to kind of have one size fits all approach to these fines.
Yeah. Talk to me about this phrase that I know is quite important in HR, the idea of bringing your employer into disrepute. Now that does sound like it's, you know, if you're found guilty of doing that by your employer or by an HR rep, that could be fireable. And so in this instance, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but in this instance, technically, you could look at a Downing Street employee breaking the very rules that their institution set and go, well, hang on, isn't that you bringing your employer, quote unquote, into disrepute? What do you make of that? Where's the line?
Yeah, so I guess that's where the file, you know, the fixed penalty, the fine is one thing, but the implication of connotations on someone's job is totally different. And the phrase that you mentioned is really about bringing the company or the organisation or the governing body's reputation into question. And, you know, with these fines that have been coming through, then, yeah, if people have behaved in a way that, you know, brings reputational damage to the party and to our country, then yeah, there is absolutely, I guess, that's something that would need to be looked into.
Disrepute is a nice way of saying you've embarrassed us and so we're letting you go. And so what I guess my question to you is, if you were working on the HR side of Downing Street, would you be going, well, I think this is embarrassing, I think we should be getting all these people in to talk to them?
Yeah, so I think essentially in that situation there would need to be an investigation done, of which there has been an investigation done, and then the output would normally be sent to the organisation and the HR person to then look at whether any disciplinary action is required. So normally the investigation goes first, which is the fact finding, the gathering of evidence, looking at the emails, CCTV, pictures, photos, and if it is felt that yes, there has been embarrassment which is beyond repair, then that could lead to disciplinary action or a dismissal, depending on the circumstances.
Yeah. So really, it's quite subjective, this idea of bringing your employer into disrepute. Like if the big boss, i.e. in this instance, I guess Boris Johnson, says, well, I don't think they have, so I'm not going to sack them. It's kind of his call.
It is really. I mean, it's probably not his call alone, but he would need to weigh up the situation and the severity of it and decide what he thinks, you know, because it's multiple layers, isn't it? It's what's best for the team, what's best for the party, what's best for the country. It's a bit different to an organizational decision. There's lots of things to consider. I don't want to underplay or make it sound like it's not a big deal, because it clearly is. And I think what my point is that for people that have been given one of these penalty fines, you know, you don't have to disclose that to your employer, because it is a private matter. The employer, I'm sure, would like to know, absolutely, but there would be no reason from an HR perspective that we would need to enforce that and enforce that disclosure within a company policy. Whether that's right or wrong, that's, you know, that's debatable, but, you know, we have to draw the line somewhere in terms of people's private lives and what they do outside of work. And so obviously the most important thing is to treat people fairly and consistently.
Mandy Harmela there, lovely to catch up with her, and, you know, nice to get some clarity on the idea that technically it's not really HR's business if you get a parking fine or if you broke COVID rules. It's not your responsibility to go to your boss and say, whoops, I did this. They wouldn't find out unless you told them. And so technically the same should apply to Downing Street. And then it was interesting what she had to say about this kind of bringing the organisation into disrepute thing. It's relatively subjective. And it's doubtful at this time that Boris Johnson would say, yep, you've all brought me into disrepute, because what if he gets a fine? then he'll snook at himself. So that's probably part of the reason why we haven't seen much talk of that. And then, of course, the big question is, what if that happens? Because, like we say, it's a possibility. We're not necessarily at the end of the road when it comes to this police investigation. And that is particularly damning, or the idea of that would be particularly damning, because he is literally on record. I've played you clips of it already on the podcast. At the dispatch box, which is where he stands in the House of Commons, you know, that front bench bit, he's on record saying that no rules were broken. So if the police hand him a fine for breaking those rules, what's he meant to say? Not to mention the ministerial code says, quote, ministers who knowingly mislead Parliament will be expected to offer their resignation. It actually says offer their resignation to the PM. And I guess the PM handing a letter of resignation to himself is almost impossible to imagine. But that's the point, is the ministerial code says you can't stand up in Parliament and lie to everybody. And so, you know, what if the Prime Minister is handed a fine from the police for breaking the COVID rules, will people say, well, doesn't that mean you misled us? Okay, that's where we are. 20 fines, no fine for Johnson as yet. Still waiting for more to be revealed from the Met Police. And that means Sue Gray is held hostage until that's done. So we can't know about her findings properly either yet. And everything I've talked about so far is kind of theorising if Johnson were to get a fine and take it upon himself to resign because it's, you know, seen to have broken a code or seen to have misled Parliament or whatever. But of course, that's not factoring in the power that can be leveraged by his peers, by his fellow Conservative MPs. Last time we spoke about this on the podcast, there was really a bit of a revolution underway in that a number of Conservative MPs had written letters to the 1922 committee declaring their lack of confidence in the PM. And we all know now that if 15% of the sitting Tory MPs do that, then it triggers a vote of no confidence. And that is not optional for Boris Johnson. It's not like he can say, I can see that that's the etiquette, but I'm not going to do it. That would be categorical. You have to just put up with it in that event. So I talk about this process, by the way, at length in episode 54 of this podcast, if you want to listen back. But bottom line, 15% of the sitting Tories, that amounts to 54 people, currently would have to write in letters to the 1922 committee in order to trigger a vote of no confidence and potentially put Johnson's job in jeopardy. 54 is a lot of people. Kind of luckily for Johnson, the way that it's divvied up. If the Conservatives had less of a majority, then 15% of the sitting Conservatives would be a lower number. So that would be more problematic. And Theresa May absolutely suffered from that. But Boris Johnson is lucky in many ways that he's got such a massive majority that 15% is lots. It's 54 people. And like I say, during the height of all of this in December and January, there were reports suggesting, I mean, it depended on which paper you read, but maybe around 20 letters had been sent in from Conservative MPs. And the biggest problem we had in terms of working out exactly how many letters had been sent in was that they were anonymous. So you couldn't work out, right, who's written them? Let's count up the names. And so if they didn't want to disclose that they'd written letters, they didn't have to. Although, that being said, some of them did go public because they were so angry. That included some big names like David Davis. He stood up in the Commons and very categorically told Boris Johnson to go. Have a listen to this. It might jog your memory.
Like many on these benches, I spent weeks and months defending the Prime Minister against often angry constituents. I've reminded them of his success in delivering Brexit and on the vaccine and many other things. But I expect my leaders to shoulder the responsibility for the actions they take. Yesterday, he did the opposite of that. So I'll remind him of a quotation altogether too familiar to him of Leo Amery to Neville Chamberlain. You have sat there too long for all the good you have done. In the name of God, go.
So that was David Davis back in the Commons in January of this year. But other than people like him, like I say, we can't know for sure. We would only know if 54 people did it, if 54 Conservatives wrote in, because then that vote would be triggered. So we would see that happening and then we'd know. But if it's less than that, we can't really be sure how many. And actually what we do know as well is that at least two people who did submit letters have since removed them. And it's, you know, potentially down to the outbreak of the war in Ukraine. And many others seem to now be kind of taking the view that, all of this stuff is a bit trivial in the grand scheme of things. We need Boris Johnson to lead us on the international stage because of the crisis in Ukraine. So let's just forget about this Partygate stuff. Jacob Rees-Mogg called it, quote, disproportionate fluff, which I don't think is a fair assessment, quite frankly, because this is a matter of the very people in power breaking the rules that we all try to keep. I don't think that's ever fluff, and I don't think it's fair to describe it like that, but that does seem to be the tone that Conservatives are taking. The thing is, though, I wonder if the police actually issued Johnson with a fine, or if Sue Gray actually explicitly names and shames Johnson, or if she's even harsher, you know, in her proper findings than she was in the scaled-back version. I wonder if that would trigger, you know, lots more Conservatives to actually to write in and do it. And I think they would gauge it, some of them, on the public. You know, how angry are the public about this, even though it's relatively old news in the grand scheme of things? If we're all riled up, then I think some of them will go, right, this is best for the party, this is best for me, it's best for my constituents. So I think that's what we'll ride on. And that's a really long-winded way of me saying, you know, we don't necessarily know for sure if Boris Johnson is safe. So there you go. That is a kind of very full catch-up of everything that's happened. And hopefully it means that you can follow any developments if they come in the near future, which I hope they will. I'm ready for some answers. You know, I'm ready for this case to be closed and for us to have a full understanding of what happened. And I always feel a bit sad when really big scandals lose their momentum and everyone just forgives and forgets. You know, if things are bad, then they remain bad despite time. I really believe that. So I want people to be aware of what's happening, and I want people to pay attention. So hopefully this helps. That being said, like I say if you're in the intro, if you haven't subscribed yet, please do. And if you want to support the podcast and keep it going, then the best way to do that is to become a patron. The link is in the episode description for you to check that out. And then lastly, before I let you go, I'd like to thank a new recruit, which is very exciting. Hannah Anderson helped me put this episode together. She did lots of great research and compiling and writing, and I very much appreciate your work. Thank you for your help. And I'm going to be having, you know, potentially some help from some different individuals over the coming weeks. So Hannah, well done. Thank you for expertly producing this episode. And that is all for this week. I will catch you in the next one. Goodbye.